We are going to learn Daf Nun in Masechtas Ksubis. We are going to start from the third line from the top, Amar Rabbi Loi. So, just as a reminder, on Daf Memtes Amar Beis, the Gemara already told us two other things that Rabbi Loi taught us. The first thing is that Rabbi Loi taught us that in Usha they said that a parent is a father, should support their children. And point number two that Rabbi Loi said was that even if a parent gives away his property, even if a father gives away his property to his children while he's still alive, or his son while he's still alive, the son should still continue to support him. Now, whether or not we paskin like Rabbi Loi seems to be from the Gemara that we actually probably don't. But in any event, we definitely, those are the two statements that Rabbi Loi had said on Memtes. Now the Gemara continues with the third statement that Omer Rabbi Loi. So the third thing that Rabbi Loi taught us is as follows. The Usha Eskinu, once again, this is also that when Sanhedrin was going into Golas and they stopped in Usha, they made it the following Tegara. Hamavazvez, Alivazvez Yosim Mechomish. If a person is going to spend all their money, and this is talking about even in the context of tzedakah, or specifically in tzedakah, if a person is going to give away their money, they should not give away more than one-fifth of their money. So Rashi learns that they shouldn't do this, so that they shouldn't become an oni, so that it shouldn't become the tzibur's problem, as we'll see the Gemara sort of going to say like that in a moment. So that's how Rashi learns. You shouldn't give away too much money, so that you continue to have money for yourself, so that you could live. The Ran, where the Rush learns that the reason for that is because if you give away all your money, you won't be able to be mekayim any more mitzvahs. So it's very nice that you're spending all your money on one mitzvah, on the mitzvah of tzedakah, which is definitely a good mitzvah, but then you won't be able to do any other mitzvahs, and that's not really the point. The point is that, you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave you the money, and there are different mitzvahs that you do throughout the year, and you should be able to do all of them. So why are you spending all your money on one mitzvah? That's a very interesting svara, I think, that the Rush says. In any event, the point is that you shouldn't spend more than one-fifth or give away more than one-fifth. Now, another thing that's important over here that Tosfos points out, which is when we're talking about giving away a fifth of your wealth, we're talking about, so there's two things. Let's say a person, for example, has $1 million. So a fifth is $200,000. So no problem. He gives away a fifth, $200,000. Now, next year, that's 1 year. Next year, and interesting, for whatever reason, I'm not sure why, but for whatever reason, it goes by a yearly cheshbon. It goes by the year. Again, maybe Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, I'm not sure what the cheshbon is, but it goes by the year. In any event, so next year you have $800,000. And, let's just say for argument's sake, you earned $100,000. Now, when we talk about you're not allowed to give away a fifth, what are we talking about? Are we talking about a fifth of $900,000? Or are we talking about a fifth of $100,000? So Tosfos and most of the Rishonim agree with Tosfos and say that we're talking about, you cannot, once you give away your fifth on the first, on your base, on what, on what you own, let's say a person inherited a house and the house is worth $1 million, so now he has that to deal with. So once you give the fifth away, 20% away on that first base salary, so then that goes in the bank. That, you can't give away a fifth every year. It means per year of the earnings per year. So, that means in our example where he already gave away $200,000 on the million, he was left with $800,000, he earned $100,000 on the following year, he would only be able to give away $20,000 on the $100,000. So in other words, la halacha, you should not be giving away every year 20% of everything you own. It's only 20% of what you earned in that particular year. So that's what Tosfos says, and most of the Rishonim learn like that as well. I believe it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that's the halacha. Okay, so in other words, you shouldn't be spending every year 20% on your entire net value. Okay. Now, the Gemara continues and says as follows. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned a brisa similar to this. Hamavazvez, if a person is going to spend money on tzedakah, yavazvez yosim mechomesh, he shouldn't spend more than one-fifth. Shema yitzdarech lebriyos, because then otherwise he might have to come on to everybody else to help him. This is similar to the way Rashi explained. Because otherwise he's going to give away all his money, other people are going to have to support him. Similar to what we learned earlier in the Gemara, where it says that a person can't say, where we learned on Daf Memches, where a person can't say, right, in the bottom of Memches, where the person can't say, let the tzibur bury me so my children can yarshin. You can't make yourself the problem of the tzibur. If you can take care of yourself, you have to take care of yourself. Okay. Similarly, the Gemara says, "Amaisa be'echod." There was one person, Shabikas Lavaza Yosim Mechoimish, that he wanted to spend more. You know, he wanted to be a big bal tzedakah and give away more than he could. V'loiniach loy chaveirov, and people chaveiroy and his friends did not let him. Umana Rabbi Yisheva. Rabbi Yisheva didn't let him do this. V'amirlo Rabbi Yisheva, and some people say the story actually happened to Rabbi Yisheva. V'loinichu chaveiroy, and the friends of Rabbi Yisheva didn't let him. Umana Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva didn't let him give away more than he could afford. So again, you see that there is a cap on how much you could spend. Amar Rav Nachman v'itemer Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Maikra. What's the basis for this? Now here, the Gemara is saying the other way around, not the cap, but the minimum. How do we know that there's a concept of giving away 1/5? Because the pasuk says, "V'chol asher titein li aser aserenu loch," that whatever I give you, whatever you give me, I should give meiser. It says meiser twice. But the Gemara itself points out that the second 10th percent is different than the first 10%. So again, let's talk our classic example. I have $10. So 10% of $10 is $1, which means I only have $9 left. So 10% of $9 is 9.5, which means, excuse me, is 3/4 of $1. Or 90 cents is 90 cents. So the first 10% I gave away $1. The second 10% I'm only giving away 90 cents. So it's not really the same. So I'm not really giving away initially 20% of my $10. I'm giving 2 10 percents as it's diminished. So that's the pasuk. So Omar Rav Ashi Asrenu Lebasro Kikama. That's why the pasuk uses two different words, Aser Asrenu. So the second Asrenu uses a different lashon to say that you could give the second 10% equal to the first 10%, so that in fact you're actually giving an aggregate of 20% of the original number, and you don't look back at the second number. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Simi Bar Ashi. Now, interesting, as I mentioned to you when we started, that the three things that Rabbi Loi said, this is the third memra that Rabbi Loi said, but each one gets less and less. Because, what is the Gemara referring to? Because the first time Rabbi Loi quoted a halacha, he quoted it in the name of Reish Lakish, in the name of Yehuda Rab Chanino. That was his first one. The second halacha, Rabbi Loi said it only in the name of Reish Lakish. And in the third halacha, Rabbi Loi said it on his own. So each time he quoted less and less people, his source of information was coming from less and less people. So how do you know the Simonach, and how do you remember which one he quoted in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina and which ones he didn't? The Simonach, the way to remember is Ketanim Kasvu Ubizvizu. That Ketanim is, again, that you have to support the Ketanim. Kasvu means he wrote over his Nechasim to his children. Vizvizu is a Mevazvez for tzedakah purposes. So the Ketanim wrote Ubizvizu, and now we see that it gets less and less. Ubizvizu, that means they gave it away. So he gave away, meaning he has less and less. So we see that he was quoting less and less people. So that's how you remember which member is the one he said, B'Shem, B'Shem Reish Lakish, and then also B'Shem Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chanina. Fine, that's that halach. Now the Gemara, now we're still on the same frame of things that happened in Usha. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, B'Usha Eskinu, again another takana that they made in Usha, She'e Oda Megalgal Im Benoi Ad Shteim Esre Shono. That a person should go try working with his son until he's 12 years old. Here we're talking about a totally new topic. Over here we're talking about teaching your son Torah. So you should try gently to learn with your son until he's 12 years old. If he gets it, he gets it. Great. But afterwards, after 12 years old, if your son's not in the mood, Yoyed Imay Lechayev. Then you get involved. Then you go into his life and you don't give him any more choices. Here, now he's 12 years old. Now he has to learn whether he likes it or not. And you could just get involved. Okay. So the Gemara seems to say that before 12 years old, we don't do anything special. So therefore the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? Rav said to Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, Basumi Barshis Loisa Kabo. Under 6 years old, don't accept them to your yeshiva. Barshis Kibo, but once they're 6 years old, you should take them in yeshiva. The Safi like Keturah, and you should feed them, force feed them like an ox. So we see that what do you mean at the age of 6 years old you're already starting to force feed and you're starting to push you know as much learning into them as possible, not at the age of 12 like we said beforehand. So the Gemara says like this: in safilei keturah, yes, we feed them as much as we can, meaning if they're going to eat we feed them and we make available for them as much teira as possible. Miu in a yerd imay lechayov ad la'achar shtei masrishana, but we don't get involved, we don't force them to get involved until they're 12 years old. Meaning like this: if the kid's willing to sit down and learn, then you feed them, you give them as much as you can, try to, you know, put him as much information as possible. But if the kid himself wants to run off and do something else, no problem. We're not gonna chain him down to the table. But if after 12 years old, if the kid just doesn't even want to sit down, then that's when we're gonna say, no, you're gonna sit down and you're gonna learn. That's one teretz. Or another teretz is really, and in all situations, you teach them as much as possible. But the major difference is what are you teaching them? Chumash, even a six-year-old, the chumash, they should be able to handle. But they're not yet ready for the more complicated stuff like Mishnah and so on and so forth. So Mishnah, we only get them involved when they're, you know, force them to get involved when they are at 12 years old. Amar Abaya. Zabaya taught us, Amr Li Aim, my mother taught me. Bar Shis Lemikra, a 6-year-old is already ready to learn Chumash. Bar Eser Lemishnah, a 10-year-old, it can already start learning Mishnayos, that's already the right age that they can handle it. Bar Tleser Litanisa, May Ace La Ace, that, and a 13 years old is when they can start fasting. Ubatinoikas Bas Tracer, and for a girl, that's already at 12 years old. So here there's a major machloikas Rishonim. What age we're talking about and what we're talking. Basically, according to Rashi, what we're talking about over here is that when we say a 13-year-old and a 12-year-old, we really mean this altschinuch. That's the way Rashi learns. Altschinuch, that already in the age that they are in their 13th year, which means you're 12 years old in a day. 12 years old in a day means you're starting to work on your 13th year. It's the 13th time you're experiencing that date. That's when you should start giving chinuch to your children to start fasting the fast that they can handle. And the same thing is true for a girl already at 12, which in her case would be 11. She would, they're stronger, girls are built stronger, they can handle it. Or as Rashi says, because a boy who's 12 years old is supposed to be learning, and if he's fasting, he won't be able to learn. So he won't be able to learn as well. So, you know, we don't want to start too early. That's the way Rashi learns. Tosfos, another Rishonim learn, that we're talking about, no, we are talking about 12 and 13, though, as we know it, at the age of Bar Mitzvah and Bas Mitzvah, that they are, that's what the Gemara is referring to over here. Which means that if you learn like Tosfos, that under the age of 12 or 13, as the case may be, that we are not, that there is no Chiyuv Chinuch to make them fast. It's not going to help anything to make them fast under Bar Mitzvah or not. Okay, so this is, again, depending on how you learn the Gemara, is going to be obviously, again, a nafkamino, so to speak, la halacha in terms of chinuch, whether there is an inyan to start fasting earlier or not.
Sure.
Yes, the Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Amr Li Aim, my mother also taught me, Hai Bashis de Tarko Le Akrava, that you have a 6-year-old that is bitten by a scorpion, B'yoyma de Mishlam Shis, on the day that he becomes a 6-year-old, let's say on his birthday, Loi Chai, he's not going to live. So the way Rashi learns is he will not live without a cure. Maya Susa, so what would be the cure to make sure that he doesn't die? Marasa Didei, you take the mara, which is the spleen or whatever it is, the body part of that animal, Chavirta, Beshichra, and you dip it in beer, Nashfe, and you smear it on the bite, Venashkaya, and you should drink from it. Okay, so that's the way Rashi learns. Rashi learns that this is a cure after the fact. That if he gets bitten, this is what you need to do to live, otherwise he's not going to live. Tosfos learns and says, no, the Gemara says, you're not going to live. So what it means is to say is that what you should do, it's like, you know, this is the bug repellent. That's what Tosfos says, you should do this ahead of time so that he is not bitten in the first place. But once he's bitten, it's too late. And similarly, the Gemara says as follows: Hi Bar Shasa, you have a 6-year-old. The Tarek Le Zibura, that a bug is usually like a hornet or something that bites him. B'yoyimid the Mishlam L'Shisa, on the day that it becomes 6 years old, Loichai, once again, he's not going to live. Ma'asusa, what's the cure? Itzusa de Dikla, the vine that wraps around a palm tree, a date tree. B'mai, you stick that in water. Nishvaya, once again, you should smear that on the bite. The Nishkaya, and he should drink it, and that's how he's going to live. Fine. Amar Rav Katina told us, Kol ha-machnes es bonoi pachas mi ben sheish. Anybody who starts learning with his child under the age of 6-year-old, Rotz acharav ve'ne magiyoi, will be chasing after him, and and he'll never be able to catch up. Meaning, the way Rashi learns is that because we know that Torah is machish, the Torah makes a person weak, obviously in a weak, in a maybe more in a physical way. But the point is that once he gets that, so to speak, weakness of the Torah in him before the age of 6, he's never really going to be fully cured. Ikadamri, but there's a slightly different version that says Chaveirov Rotzen Acharav Eina Magiyin. So it's the opposite. That his friends, meaning that he will know so much Torah. If he starts learning Torah even before the age of 6, what he gets is, as we, you know, another famous line is Girsu Diyankusa. What you learn when you're younger stays with you forever, that he's going to have so much that no one else is going to be able to catch up to him. He'll be so much further ahead than everybody. Fine. V'tarvayu isnehu. And the truth of the matter is, both of the things are true. Cholish v'gomer. He's going to get weak. He's never going to be, you know, that macho builder. And he'll also learn much more than everybody else. That's one error. In other words, what we're saying is that you shouldn't, if you start before 6 years old, it's going to have this impact forever. But another teretz is like this. It makes a big difference on how strong the child is. If the child is weak, so then anachanami, before 6 years old, it's going to impact him. He'll never be able to be healthy, 100%. But if he's a strong person, Ibari is a healthy kid, so then even after under the age of 6, it's not going to have a negative impact on him. So depending on which teretz you learn in the Gemara over here, you have to know whether or not, you know, is it the time to force the kid to sit and learn or not under the age of 6. So Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina taught us Be'usha Eskina again. So now we're quoting different things that they were misakin, that the takanas that they made in Usha. So, a woman sold her nichsei melug even while her husband is alive. Nichsei melug, just as a reminder, is property that a wife brings into the marriage, which is not assessed at an exact value. It is whatever it is, and during the marriage itself, the property still belongs to her as long as everybody's alive. And during the marriage itself, it is her property. However, the husband has full use of that property. What does that mean? In Lomdisha terms, what that means is that the husband has the right leperos. He doesn't own the keren, he doesn't own the base, the object itself, but he does have the rights to use anything that is produced by that. So let's say, for argument's sake, she brings in an apartment building into the marriage, and there is rent, so the apartment building still belongs to her. But the rental income that comes in, those are the payrois, so that would be, the husband has a right to. So that's the basic halacha. So in this case, she took those nichsei melug, and she sold it to somebody else, so the wife went ahead. Remember, it does technically belong to her. But she went ahead and she sold it to somebody, she sold the building to somebody else. Umesa, and now she died. So here's the chiddush. This is the takara that they did in Usha. Habal moitzim yad ala kuchos. The husband is able to take it away from the purchaser, which is actually quite a bit chiddush, because technically it really belongs to her. Now I understand that the wife can't sell his rental income that he deserved to collect while they were married, because that was meshubah to him. I get it. But in Usha they said even more than that. In Usha they said that the husband can go ahead and take it away as if he yarshined her, because if she had not sold that property, nichsei melug, when she dies, would be a Yerusha, the husband would for sure get it. Here the chiddush is that the husband is treated like a loikeach rishon, as if he bought it from her the moment they got married, and therefore if she tries to sell it, he says, no, what are you talking about? I have my deed predates your deed, and therefore I take the property. This is a major takana that they did in Usha. Ashkechei Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef the Rav Avua the Havikoi Ba'uchsu Ba'chlusa the Usha. So he was standing in a, apparently they had like a place where in Usha that they all gathered together. So everybody was standing around over there. Amar Lein, he said, Man Marid the Shmeitz the Usha. Who's the one who said this halacha? Who said this that the husband gets to take it? Amarlei Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina. So they said it was Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina that was mechadesh this halacha or told us about this takana. So Tanami Minei Arboin Zimnin, he learned it from him 40 times. V'damilei commanded mancholei bekisasei, and now it was in his wallet. Meaning what he was saying is like everybody knows the famous Gemara in Bava Metzia that a person is constantly touching that. You know, if you have money in your pockets, you're constantly touching your pockets to make sure you didn't lose your money and to be sure that it's always there. So he said the same thing over here. This memro was so important to him. He enjoyed it or thought it was so important that he made it. He wanted this to be something that he was constantly touching and dealing with and remembering and so on and so forth. This is the base. This is the halacha. Okay. Now the Gemara continues and says, Ashrei shomrei mishpat oisit tzedaka b'chol eis. So once we said this idea that he made something as if he always wanted to have it available to learn. So now the Gemara quotes a pasuk, praised is a person, or happy actually is an interesting translation, that is a person who watches the Shomrei Mishpati, watches the laws, oisit tzedaka b'chol eis, and is doing tzedaka b'chol at every moment. V'chiev shalasu tzedaka b'chol eis. So how could a person do tzedaka every moment? How's that possible? Doshu Rabbi Seinu Shebi Yavna, son Yavna, they taught us, v'amalei Rabbi Eliezer, or maybe Rabbi Eliezer said, ze hason bonov ubenoisov kishehein kitanim. This is taking care of even your own children when they are younger. Because as we learned earlier in the Mishnah, a person technically, midaraiso, is not chayev to support his children. Maybe we're talking about till six, possibly you do have a chayev daraiso, but certainly over the age of 6 years old, you don't have a chayev. It's only a takanas chazal that a person takes care of their children. So therefore, if you do, you're doing so as a tzedakah, and taking care of your children is a tzedakah, constant tzedakah. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Amar Zeh Megadol Yosem V'Yosemim B'Soich Beisoi. This is really referring to even a larger level. It's not talking about your own children, but it's talking about taking in a Yosem and a Yosem or a Yosema Umasiyoin, and you marry them off. So in other words, and then, you know, there are a few people, I've heard stories where people, you know, take in these kids that don't have, are not otherwise supported, or adopting a child or whatever it is, and they mamish bring them up as if they're their own child and then marry them off. This is considered a tzedakah that it's an endless type of tzedakah. Okay. Next, the Gemara quotes a pasuk, Hain va'oisher bebeisoi. So then there's sometimes where a person is wealthy in his house, vitzid kasoi, aymed es lo'ad, and the tzedakah aspect of it, he'll be wealthy and he'll also have the mitzvah of tzedakah forever. What's this pasuk referring to? Rav Huna v'Rav Chista. So both Rav Huna and Rav Chista say it like this. Chad amar zeh aloy mei Torah umalamda. This is talking about somebody who learns Torah himself and teaches it to somebody else. So again, so he has the oisher because he learned the Torah, so now he has it, and Malamda, and he teaches it to somebody else. That's the tzedakah that he has, so he has it for himself, and in other words, it doesn't use up the keren, the base, the principle, as we call it in English. The principle doesn't get used up, because he still has the same Torah that he learned originally, even when he's teaching it to somebody else. V'chad Omar, that's one version. V'chad Omar Zeh, Koisef Torah Neviim V'Ksuvim U'Mashilu Na'achim. If he writes the Svarim, if you write Svarim and then you lend them out to other people, so again, you get the schus to write the Sefer. The Sefer is still going to be there, and it gets to be used over and over and over again. So that's the constant tzedakah, even, and you still have the base, you still have the Svarim that you wrote. Next, Pasuk the Gemara Darshan's Vero Banim Livan Urei Banim Livanecha Shalom Al Yisrael. If you see children to your grandchildren, then there'll be peace. What's this talking about? Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi Kivan Shebanim Livanecha. Once you have, I guess, simple translations, you have grandchildren, you have sons to your sons, Shalom Al Yisrael, then there will be peace. Why? Deloy Osi Lidei Chalitza V'Yibum. There will not be a din of Chalitza. As we know, that if a person obviously dies with children, there is no mitzvah of Yibum. So, and we learned in Masechtas Yevamos that that's true even if only a grandchild survived. That's enough to make a person not chayev in the mitzvah of Yibum. So that's what he's saying is that once you have grandchildren, you're assured that you're not going to have to do the mitzvah of Yibam and Chalitza. And as we know, Yibam and Chalitza is a very uncomfortable situation and people don't necessarily want to do it. So it could create a rift in the family. So that's why the Shalom Al Yisrael, it will make sure that it'll be peaceful once a person has grandchildren. That's one shot. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Amar Kibun Shebonim Livanecha. Once a person has great sons from his sons, Shalom Al Dayone Yisrael. It's referring to the Dayanim are not going to have to get involved over here. The Loyosi Linsuya, nobody's going to have to fight. So the way Rashi learns is they're not going to have to fight over the Yerusha. Because now we know exactly where the money's going to have to go. The money's going to have to go to his son, then it's going to go to the grandchildren. We know it's all planned out how the Yerusha is going to go. There's not going to be any fights. It's going to be very simple. When there's no children, then Bezdin has to get involved and figure out who the relatives were and what did the father want and so on and so forth. Although some Rishonim do point out that we're talking the same would be true if there's also only daughters, because again, there we know the din is Daraisa also goes straight to the daughters and there's no question. So what it means to say is, according to those Rishonim, is that any time we know what to do and we can avoid a machlekes, that's Shalom Al Yisrael. If we know what to do, there's no issue. It's only when we don't know what to do, so then different people, of course, have their own opinions, and that's where we get into trouble. Okay, those are the psukim that the Gemara tarshins in order to teach us what this tzedakah is and to give us, based on this a concept of tzedakah, that even on your children, since a parent doesn't really midaraisa have an obligation to support the children, supporting the children is considered a tzedakah. So those are the psukim that we darshins. Okay, let's continue on to the next part of the Mishnah. The last line of the Gemara over here says, Medrash Darsh Rav Elozer Lefnei Chachamim. So if you look back at the Mishnah, what he said was that the same way the sons Yarshin, the daughters are entitled to get mezonos from the estate when the father dies. Okay, that takes us to the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph. Now we're at the top. The Gemara starts at the top of Nun Amud Beis. Gemara says like this: Yosef, Rabbi Yosef, Kamei de Rav Hamnuna. So Rabbi Yosef was learning with Rav Hamnuna. The Yosef Rav Hamnuna becoming Rabbi Hamnuna was saying the following: Shame, Shein Abonim Yorshin Elo Min HaKarka. The same way. Now we're going to translate this literally because this is what the Havamina of the Gemara was. That the same way sons only Yarshin if there is land involved, real property involved. So too, the girls only are entitled to this concept of getting mezonos from the estate if there is real property, land involved. So this is a phenomenal statement, because he's saying is this concept of Yerusha doesn't apply to stam the estate, to the money. It only applies specifically to karka. So of course the immediate reaction is Obshuale Kuleyama, everybody started jumping on him. They all gathered around him and they said, the Shavik Ara, who the Yarsi Le Bonay. You're telling me that only if a person owns real estate, then his children get a Yerusha? The Loy Shavik Ara Lo Yarsi Le Bonay. But if he doesn't have real estate, if he doesn't have real property, so then his children aren't entitled to Yerusha? Are you trying to tell me that the din on the Torah of Yerusha only applies specifically if there's real estate? That's the new din? So everybody obviously had a problem with that statement. So Omar Le Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef said, no, let's explain. The Dilmuk Subas Benin Dichrin Ka Omar Mar. What he was saying is this concept of Benin Dichrin, which is not the regular Din Daraisa. This is the Takana. So what is Benin Dichrin? The Benin Dichrin are as follows. When a person in their Ksuba, they write that the children of a mother, of his wife at the time, are entitled to the Ksuba of their wife. So let's just illustrate the point as Rashi does. Rashi makes this point. Let's say a guy was married twice. So with his first wife, he had two children. And with his second wife, he had eight children. So altogether, they had 10 children. Fine, no problem. So if he dies, and they just take his Yerusha, they take his estate, again, for argument's sake, we'll use $1 million. So he has $1 million. He divided up among 10 children. Everybody gets $100,000. Very nice. It's very simple. Okay. But Ksubas Benin Dichrin, what it says is that each child is entitled to, or the children of that particular mother are entitled to their share of the ksuba. Let's again, for argument's sake, let's now say that the ksuba was each ksuba was $100,000 or $200,000. So of course, If we split everything equally, each child is only going to get 100. But if we say, so the children from the from the mother that only had two children, they want to split up their ksuba of their mother by themselves without the other eight children involved, because they get a much larger percentage that way. Because now, if her ksuba was worth $200,000, an example, so then they just, off the top, they skim $100,000 off the top for themselves, easily. And then the other eight children are have to divide up also $200,000, but then they're getting a much smaller portion. So again, now it's true there's only $600,000 left, but this is on top of the $100,000 that they already put in their pocket. So again, I'm being very, very specific in the example, but that's the idea. Is ksubas, so what we're saying is like this. Ksubas benin dichrin, again, is this idea that the children are entitled to take their mother's ksuba. And the reason why it's a takana is because, as you know, a woman is only really entitled to the ksuba if the husband died first, or they get divorced. But in this case, we're talking about a case where the mother or mothers died first. So they're really, the children are not entitled to the ksuba at all. But that's the takana of ksubas benin dichrin. That's the takana. The takana is that when the father dies and he has an estate, that the children can yarshin the ksuba ahead of time. Now this is really only relevant if there's more than one wife. If there's only one wife, it's not really relevant because they're all going to split everything anyway. So it doesn't matter whether you split it first as the ksuba and then the rest of the estate. It's always the same amount of children splitting the same amount of money. So it doesn't make a difference. Fine. But last point that I'll just say on this thing, which is obviously very important, is only this concept of ksubas benin dichrin, even though the Gemara doesn't say it, beferish over here, is talking about where there is, after they take the value of the ksuba, there is still money left. So in our example where we said, I don't remember whether we said $100,000 each ksuba or $200,000, whatever it was, let's say $200,000, there has to be at least $401,000 in the estate in order to be able to do this. Because if there isn't, if let's say there's only $300,000 in our example, so there isn't enough to do the ksubos and also do a Yerusha Daraisa. Ultimately, you have to have, the idea, the takana over here is not to uproot the din daraisa, is just to do a siphoning off. But the din daraisa must be in play. That's the rule. For whatever reason, that's what the Gemara, when the Gemara discusses this on Daf Tzadi Aleph, when we get there, Mirtz Hashem, and another, you know, in a while, we'll get there. But the point is that there has to be a din Yerusha. There has to be enough in the estate in addition to the ksubas of the first. You could take off the ksubas first, provided that there will still remain enough to do the regular din of Yerusha. If there is no din of Yerusha available, again, this is based on the Gemara and Tzadik Aleph, that's part of the takana. If you're not going to be able, if after you take the ksubas, there's going to be nothing left to do the Yerusha, the Raisa, then we do not do the Ksubas Benin Dichrin. Ksubas Benin Dichrin is only in that situation. And that is, one more second, and that is what Rav Amnuna was saying when he says this is Karka, so now he's adding an extra criteria. And he's saying that not only does there have to be enough to fulfill eventually a Din Daraisa of your regular Yerusha and divided among, in our example, the 10 children, there also has to be, this is only true if we're talking about karka. This is the idea that they're entitled to take their mother's ksuba first, is if, and this is the way he learns that the takana was created, is if we're dealing with real estate, with real land. If, for example, the father just had millions and billions of dollars in stock, right, where it's just, that's metaltalin, right, or value, or whatever it is, then the din of ksubas benin dichrin doesn't apply at all. So again, so we need two major criteria. Once we understand what the concept is, we also have to understand what the conditions are. The conditions are, A, we're dealing in real estate, and B, we're talking about this after we do the ksubas benin dichrin, there still has to be enough money left in the pot to be able to do the Yerusha de'araisa. So just to finish off the last line here, so Omar Leis, he said, Mar de Gavar Rabbahu Yodamai Ka Amina. He says, oh, you're a great person. You understood what I meant. So this is what I meant. When I said that there's only a din of Yerusha if there's Karka, I meant the din of Ksubas Benin Dichrin. The Ksubas Benin Dichrin only applies if in the estate is enough Karka to be able to supply the payment of the Ksubas, and in addition to that, on top of that, there'll still be a din of Yerusha. Next din, the Gemara now goes for the next thing. Omar Rav Chiya Bar Yosef, Rav Zon Mechita Dalia. Rav would he would give food to the children from Metaltolin. From Chita Dalia means from the, you know, from grain that he had gathered in his silo, and not from, essentially from metaltolin and not from karka. And the chiddush was that not only was he supporting the children, but he was supporting the children using metaltolin. So this idea, this din, that we go, you know, going back to the idea of supporting the children, is not only from karka, which, you know, could, based on what we just said before, there are certain halachas that only apply for, with real estate, or were only enacted by Chazal if there is real estate. He's saying when it comes to supporting the children, it's not only real estate, it could be from all, from all type of metaltolin. So the Gemara now asks, Ibai Luhu, Parnasa Have, did he mean that he gave them food, Umay Aliyah Mi'iluye Da'av? And when he says that, what he meant was the Nedunya. Okay, so in other words, like this. What type of support are we talking about? Are we literally talking about buying cereal for breakfast in the morning? Are we talking about putting food on the table? Or are we talking about, when we talk about parnasa, what we mean is like this. Typically, again, obviously it depends on the situation, but again, the standard practice was that when a daughter gets married, they give an adunya. The father gives a dowry, he gives something extra. So when he talked about the fact that metaltolin can be used, are we talking about literally you could sell metaltolin, you can sell the stock to buy cereal? Or are we talking about the dowry? That's his question. Ibai, the parnasa have? Did he mean the parnasa over here means the dowry? Umay aliyah mi'iluya da'av? Or do we mean what the father, we figure out what the father would have wanted? Ukid Shmuel, and this would be following Shmuel's halach d'arma, Shmuel le parnasa shamin ba'av. And when it comes to parnasa, meaning again, parnasa over here in this context means the dowry to get her married. So we evaluate what the father would want. In other words, Bezdin can go and assess, oh, this is the type of father, he would have given his daughter $1 million. Or, nah, this guy's a cheapskate, he would have given her, you know, he would have bought the linen for the mattress and that's that. So we assess what the father would have given. Is that what we're talking about in the chiddush, is that assessment would be done even in the metaltolin? Well, maybe it means literally that the chiddush over here would be that you could use metaltolin for the sake of buying food so that they can eat. Umay aliyah. So then what do we mean by aliyah? Midvarim toivrim shenemru ba'aliyah. Are we talking about those things that were discussed in the aliyah? That's talking about in the Usha and what they discussed, what the Chazal discussed, the fact that you have to support your children. Tom Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef ba'aliyah hiskinu. This was discussed up in the attic. She had bonois nizoinois min ha-metaltolin. That you should use metaltolin also to support, you could sell metaltolin to support the daughters to pay for their food, and not just, again, in contrast to what we said on the top of the Amud that we were talking about karka, in contrast, this can be done with your classic metaltolin. So what do we mean? So what was his point when he was saying that you could use metaltolin to support? Again, just to reiterate, are we talking about supporting day-to-day food on the table, or are we talking about supporting dowry so that he can marry her off? So Toshima, so we learned the following. So again, Toshima, Biyodi de Rabbinoi, Achva de Rabchia bar Abba, Havin Metaltolin de Yasmi. So he was in charge, he was the executor of the estate, he had Metaltolin that he was taking care of for the Yezis. Amen. Also, the Kame de Shmuel, so he came to Shmuel and he asked what he should do. Amale Zil Zon. So he told her, go and use this money. So, right, he said, go and give food for the children, for the girls. Now, he only had metaltolin. There was no real estate involved. It was only metaltolin. So, the Gemara wants to be medayik. My love, the mezoini. So, it must be that we're talking about for food. That he told them, you can spend the metaltolin on food. Ukad Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, svirulei. And we're holding like Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, that says that you can sell metaltalin for the purposes of putting food on the table. So the Gemara answers, loy. Hosom leparnoso have ud shmuel letaime. Over there, we're actually talking about dowry. When we talk about parnosa, it's like getting her parnosa. Again, we use the word parnosa for a salary, but that's not really how the Gemara uses the word parnosa. Parnosa, the Gemara is saying, is supporting the person in a way that they're able to move on to the next stage. So that means the dowry for the marriage. And it's shmuel letaime, and this is what Shmuel always says. Damar shmuel leparnosa shame baav enachnami. He meant, and remember, this is Shmuel. He asked Shmuel what to do. And Shmuel is the one who said, go support. Go use for zon. So mezonos. So mezonos, again, it makes sense that we would translate this to mean food on the table. However, since we're talking about Shmuel, and Shmuel happens to be the one who is the Baal Memra, the one who said this idea that you give a dowry and you assess the father, so that's what he meant over here also, that you could use this money again, even that would be the bigger chiddush. That you could use the money, even metaltalin, to donate or contribute to a dowry. Have uvdu bin Ardo. So again, this story once again happened in Ardo. V'don daino din Ardo bepumpadiso. Sorry, v'don daino din Ardo, and the judges in Ardo also that they gave mezonos from the metaltalin bepumpadiso. So now. In other words, they paskin, the Besdin paskin, that you could use metaltalin for the purposes of supporting the children. But Pumpadisa, the story also happened in Pumpadisa. The Agvi Rav Chana Bar Bizno, and Rav Chana Bar Bizno collected the money. Okay? Meaning that, that he said that you could use the money for the children. So Amalei Rav Nachman, Zil Ahaju. He said, nope, you did wrong. That is not the halacha. You may not use metaltalin for the supporting of the daughters. The Eloi magvina luchu laapud naichu minaichu. The Eloi, comma, and if you don't return the money, magvina luchu laapud naichu minaichu. I'm going to go collect your house from them. Apud naichu is usually translated as your castle. I'm going to collect from your estate to repay the father's estate. In other words, so what he Rav Nachman was paskening actually just the opposite. He was saying that this concept of metaltalin are not meshubed in the estate to support the daughters. It's only in real estate according to Rav Nachman Shita that is meshubed. Because it has a kiyum, and this is what the father meant, that that should be used for supporting the daughters for mezainis. But if they only have metaltalin, according to this line in the Gemara, it would come out that you cannot use that money for supporting the food on the table for the daughters. Rav Ami v'Rav Asi sover l'mezen metaltalin. Once again, they wanted to use food for the purposes of, but again, they were going to take this from metaltalin. Amalahu Rav Yaakov bar Idi Milsa de Rav Yochanan ve Reish Lakish Loi Avdu Bei Uvdo. So Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish didn't want to do this. They didn't want to take the metaltalin. Atan Avdu Bei Uvdo. You all of a sudden are going to decide to do this. So once again, you see that the Gemara was very opposed to taking metaltalin for the purposes of supporting the girls. For the mezonos. Now remember, this is to put this into context, we're not talking about the father's not alive. If the father was alive, the father can support from wherever he wants. I mean, we talked about that was, you know, that's what we talked about earlier, that a parent is it should be taking care of their children, and it's a tzedakah, and whatever source of money and metaltalin, wherever they're getting that money from, they're getting. That's fine. That's not an issue. The issue here we're discussing is the father died. There is an estate. There's a din d'araisa that the estate is really yarshined by the sons. That is the din d'araisa. And Usha, they were masakin that, by the way, we want to make sure that the girls have support as well. So the chiddush, so what the Gemara is trying to say is, yes, that's all true and, you know, dandy that the fact that the daughters are going to have some level of support with their, to be able to eat. But that's only talking about even the takanas chazal that they're imposing this din. Keneged the din d'araiso is only talking about if there's actual real estate in karka. They're not talking about if there's just random metaltalin around. That was never the place where Chazal instituted this takono that the estate is obligated to support the daughters. That's what seems to be where the Gemara is headed over here. Rabbi Elazar Sarvel Amazim Mimetaltalin, and again, Rabbi Elazar also wanted to use Metaltalin to support the daughters. Amar Lufanuk, in other words, because in our mind, the estate is the estate. What difference does it make what the source of income from the estate is? And that's where the Gemara is making a very strong distinction between Karka estate and Metaltalin in the estate. So again, he wanted to use Metaltalin to support the daughters. Amar Lufanuk, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliakim, Rebbe. So he said, Rebbe, Yoidea ani b'cho she'ein midas hadin ata oiso, elo midas rachmanos. I know that you're not doing this minadin, because again, minadin, there's really no obligation. You want to do it also rachmanos because you feel bad for the girls you want to take. But the problem is that people are going to see what you're doing, and they're going to start thinking that that's the halacha. And once again, the point is that's not the halacha. That was never the takon of Chazal. It was never the takon of Chazal that you could use the metaltolin again. Willingly, you could do whatever you want. We're talking about over here, of course, where the sons are saying, I don't want you using my money to support the daughters. That's why the Gemara Namad Aleph said that if you know exactly how the Yerusha works, there's no fighting. But apparently we're talking about a lovely family over here that doesn't, they don't want to support the daughters, or maybe there's just not enough money to go around and they need it. So the question is, can they force the sons to use the estate money to support the daughters? So he says, listen, I hear what you're doing, Al Tzurachmanis, you're taking care of the daughters, but Lamaisa, that's not the halacha, and people are going to misunderstand what you're doing. Ahuda also the comment to Rabbi Yosef. Somebody came to Rabbi Yosef, Amaluhu. So he said, Havuli mitamri gaal budja. Okay, please give me the dates that are on the mat. Meaning, because what happened was, dates, they grow on a tree. Eventually, when they ripen, you knock them off the tree and they fall down onto a mat, and you put it in a mat, you collect it on a mat, and then you take it and you sell it and you eat it and you do whatever you want. Okay, so what he said was, there's plenty of dates on the ground. Could you give me support for the daughters from these dates that are on the mats? Now, the problem is, as you can just understand, that once the dates fall onto the mats, they are no longer attached, they are no longer part of karka. They are now classic metaltalin. They're no different than anything else that you can move around. And the problem was that he was asking to support the daughter from these dates, which are now technically metaltalin. So Amale Abaya, Ilu Bal Choiv Have, if you were somebody he owed money, ki agavna mi have yoivle mar, would you give the Bal Choiv, just like a Bal Choiv from Yorshim, it does not have a right to metaltolin, only has a right to collect from Yorshim from Karko. So if you consider these girls like a Bal Choiv, that somebody owes them money, let's say that Takana made it as if they have the rights to the money, but they are no better than anybody else that the estate owes money to, and if they and you would agree that these are metaltolin, you wouldn't pay it to a Bal Choiv, so why do you think that I should give it to the daughters? What I meant to say is not the dates that are on the mat itself. The dates that are on the mat itself, I agree, those are metaltolin, those are not meshubad, I can't touch them. What I meant was the dates that are about to fall onto the mat. Those are the dates which are still technically attached. So if they're still technically attached to the ground, to the tree, and therefore to the ground, they're still part of karka. So if they're part of karka, we should be able to use those to support the daughter. So now this takes us to the top of Nun Aleph and Bet Aleph. I'm just going to read these two lines to the two dots. So the Gemara says, fine. But even if they're still attached, soif kolo oimid lig sois kagozos domi. So there's this concept that we'll just mention for 2 seconds here, that if you have something that is ready to become, to be shorn off, let's say you have a sheep, the classic example is a sheep that's full of wool that you're about to shear off the wool, so it's already as if it's detached. And the same thing is true by fruit that's fully ripe on a tree, that is about to fall off the tree, and you just grab it 2 seconds before it falls off the tree. Even while it's still hanging on the tree, it's already detached. Meaning if it's getting nothing, it is getting no nutrients from the karka anymore, it's not really considered attached to the karka. Again, even though physically it might, if you look at it, it is attached, it hasn't fallen off the tree yet, but realistically, la halacha, we consider as if it's already detached. So once again, it should be halachically considered metaltolin. So why are you allowed to use it? So the Gemara says, d'tzricha l'dikli ka'amina. What I meant to say is, there are certain, there's a certain level where it is ripe enough that if you pick it off the tree, it's edible, it's ripe, it's perfectly good. if it stayed on the tree, yes, it would grow a little bit more if it stayed on the tree. And that's what I was talking about. What I meant is those dates that are ready to fall on the mat, meaning they're ripe enough that if I pick them, I would be able to enjoy them and they're edible. But I agree that they're still technically still growing, and if they're still growing, they're therefore still considered attached, and therefore they're karka. And that's what he was asking for. Could I take from the dates that I know, you know, if you know the seasons, if you're a farmer and you know that the dates are going to be picked in a week from now, you know that those dates, okay, leaving it on the tree for another week is going to, you know, it's going to be good for them, but they don't really need that extra, they're good enough now if you want them. That's still considered karka. But if they're ready to fall off and you just snatched it off 2 seconds before it falls off, that's already metaltalin, and certainly once it actually falls off, that's definitely metaltalin. And we see the conclusion of the Gemara is, at least at this point in the Gemara, is that if it's metaltalin, metaltalin are not mishubid for the support of the daughters. It goes in, so this really goes back to what we started on the top of the Amud with Rav Amnuna, this concept of the takana of ksubas benin dichrin and ksuba, the mezonos for the girls that are written into the ksuba, are only, this halacha was only, the takana was only in the context of something, the estate that has karka, but not from regular metaltalin. Okay, we'll stop over here.